This is Crossroads with Terry Mattingly, a Rational Sheep podcast.
You know, dogma and law are two different things. And I think whatever a religion is, it has its own dogma. The law is totally different. And I think in your case, Professor, when you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you.
That is Senator Dianne Feinstein speaking about Notre Dame law professor Amy Coney Barrett at the 2017 confirmation hearing for appeals court nominees, with almost a decade behind that, and with her ascent to the U.S. Supreme Court. Have concerns like Senator Feinstein's borne out? There's a New York Times headline, How Amy Coney Barrett is Confounding the Right and the Left. Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry is Senior Fellow on Communications and Culture at St. Constantine College in Houston, Texas. He writes Rational Sheep, a Substack newsletter for faith, family, and mass media. He's author of the National On Religion column for the Andrews McNeil Universal Syndicate. And for two decades, he led the GetReligion.org website. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Is there a religion angle in this New York Times story?
Well, to be perfectly blunt about it, I would argue that there is a huge religion angle in this piece, but the Times didn't know what to do with it. And I found that very interesting because there was a time when she was, Amy Coney Barrett was the nominee, and soon thereafter, when the New York Times and a lot of other mainstream media were pretty much obsessed with this woman's religious beliefs and whether or not they would influence her career and to what degree they would influence her career on the Supreme Court, which makes it all the more interesting when they've decided that she is a complex, nuanced legal thinker, which is exactly what many people said she was when she was nominated. The Times now doesn't seem to realize that her Catholic mind and her faith might have something to do with that. So once upon a time, religion was the big story about this woman. Now the big story is that she's a complex, nuanced, religious woman, but that what really matters is her legal mind. And I would argue that both of those factors are tremendously important. And I would remind our listeners that something that gets said all the time, and it's one of those rare cases when it gets said all the time because it's true, you know, that'll saying that a cliche is a cliche often because it's true, which is how it became a cliche. One of the most accurate cliches, I would argue, in political discourse in America is that the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church really can't be described in a political label in terms of American politics. That the church that is, quote-unquote, liberal on the death penalty by opposing it also has that same logic and teaching, the sanctity of human life from conception until natural death. They use that same logic to oppose abortion, or the same logic that leads to many of the Catholic Church's teachings on immigration, which are actually very nuanced, and you'll hardly ever see them accurately described in political press coverage of immigration arguments. But that same value for the individual that you see in Catholic concerns about immigration show up again in Catholic concerns about the handicapped, once again, the unborn, elderly, people with terminal illnesses, etc. So no one should be surprised that Amy Coney Barrett's faith plays a role in her career, but no one should be surprised that it's hard to label how that faith influences her and to what degree it influences how she carries herself, the questions she asks, and yes, the decisions that she makes. So to me, this New York Times story, which is quite good, by the way, it still has a giant gap in it. And that gap is described, I would say, by the term we used at Get Religion for 20 years, which is the story's haunted. There's a religion ghost in this story. And that ghost is how this woman's faith influences her intellect and how she does her work. And it's only ironic, even more ironic, that a newspaper, as kind of the point of the mainstream media spear, this newspaper that was so interested in her religious faith at one point because they were afraid of it, now can't seem to make up its mind whether religion has anything to do with her intellectual abilities and her approach to the law, now that they find that they might actually appreciate her in some ways. So if you're going to take a favorable view or even hint at a favorable view of Amy Coney Barrett, religion doesn't seem to play much of a role in that.
So have the New York Times editors decided that Justice Barrett is the right kind of Christian? We talk about the right Christians and wrong kind of Christians.
They're not sure about that at all because they still disagree with her fiercely on a lot of subjects. And this is where the story is good. They find some very qualified people to try to parse the kinds of legal questions that the left kind of sees hope in her and the kinds of legal questions on which the left is still scared of her, scared to death of her. At the same time, there are still issues and parts about her career that conservatives point to and saying she's still who she is. She is still the mother of seven Catholic thinker that we appreciated. While other conservatives, political conservatives more, I would say, are now screaming bloody murder about the fact that she's been disloyal to them. And I was writing up some notes for our discussion, and it kind of hit me that to some degree, we've heard this before. And let me just give you an example, because inevitably abortion will end up as a part of this decision. Is there any evidence in this story that Amy Coney Barrett's essential beliefs about the morality or even the legal status of abortion have changed? I would ask our listeners to flash back to what they remember about the decision, the Dobbs decision, which if you look it up online, you'll hardly ever see the name Dobbs, D-O-B-B-S, assigned to the story. It's always Roe was overturned. And at the time, and still to this day, you have many, many people on the left that say Dobbs was a horrible decision, but it overturned a constitutional right to abortion. And you hear many people on the right still saying Dobbs was a wonderful decision because it overturned the whole concept of abortion rights, et cetera, et cetera. But if you go back and actually read the decision and read accurate coverage of the decision, you would find that the conservative legal minds said what Dobbs did was rule that the constitutional grounds to create a defense of a right to abortion were non-existent or were poorly described or poorly debated in the original decision. And thus, we are overturning the decision and sending questions about abortion back to the states, which is where the Constitution would send those decisions. And I would argue that that's the accurate description of the Dobbs case. And as someone who kind of asked some tough questions going into the decision about the logic of the decision, but then voted with the majority, Amy Coney Barrett, I would argue, would fall into that conservative legal stance that what we're doing is turning issues of abortion back over to the states because that's constitutionally the more solid approach to take, which means that when you see Amy Coney Barrett in a decision where she has a chance to attack abortion just as an issue, period, there are conservatives who want to interpret the law that way, but they're now mad at Amy Coney Barrett, my reading, and this is covered pretty well in the Times story. What Amy Coney Barrett said was, no, this is another case where we're going to have to leave this up to the states. And states may do things that we don't want them to do, or that we may not like it when they do it. That was the role of our decision. Well, you would have some people that would say, well, she's opposing the teachings of the Catholic Church there. She's failing to attack abortion to the degree that she should. Whereas Amy Coney Barrett would probably say, no, I'm a conservative legal mind, and I'm going to stay with the ruling we made at the court, which at the time the left hated and the right loved, but perhaps the right loved it for different reasons, which means to some degree the right is now divided over the degree to which they love the legal mind of Amy Coney Barrett. And that's covered pretty well in the story. In fact, I'd say it's covered quite well. But once again, there's that huge silence. What does her religious faith and her beliefs have to do with this legal mind and the work she is doing? And I'm not saying it should have dominated the story, but they would have had no problems whatsoever finding Catholic minds on both the left and the right to analyze her life and her faith and her legal rulings and look for maybe some predictions about where that would take her in the future.
Let's talk a little bit about the cases cited in the New York Times to portray Barrett as this nuanced Catholic and legal thinker. What do they see there in her?
Well, I mean, I think the way to go at it is, why are many conservatives upset with her? I think that's the door into the subject you're raising. And simply stated, I would argue there's no evidence that Amy Coney Barrett is not as fiercely dedicated to the First Amendment and to religious liberty as she was portrayed as being when they were kind of, the Republicans were painting her as like a massive victory for conservative women and for people who want to see religious liberty defended. Which brings up the fact that recently there was a case involving charter schools in Oklahoma, and Barrett infuriated conservatives, including one or two of her colleagues, by abstaining from voting on that case. And that left it in a 4-4 deadlock, preventing what could have been a 5-4 victory for a particular form of school choice or deciding some particular questions about school choice. And Amy Coney Barrett abstained from voting because she said she had friends and connections to schools affected by this. And once again, something that in her past, liberals had been scared stiff about. She has all these connections to these strange Catholic schools and even charismatic Catholic schools, and that she's not going to be able to make accurate decisions about issues related to these schools. Well, that was then. Now, all of a sudden, the fact that her legal mind said, I actually have connections to this issue, I shouldn't be a part of the voting justices on this case because I feel maybe actions I've taken, connections I have, friends I have, associates even I have. She was a leader in a Catholic school, and that was, boy, the press covered that massively, in depth. Well, now, all of a sudden, the left is kind of saying, wow, it's good that she realized she had connections to these schools, and she did the what we consider the accurate, the proper thing legally. She abstained from this vote, whereas on some parts of the legal right and the political right, you have people now saying, well, we loved her because she was a part of those schools. We loved her because she was a leader in those kinds of schools. We loved her because we know she's a strong proponent of Christian schools and Catholic schools, etc. Well, once again, we have that shoe on the other foot because that, I guess they still like the fact that she has connections to those, to that whole world of alternative education. But maybe they're not so happy now that because of those connections, that led her to take the cautious legal action of withdrawing her voice from that vote. So to me, that would be a perfect example of the kinds of things that show up in this story. But there's one other thing that we simply have to say. Amy Coney Barrett has her views on the balance of powers in American government. And she has her views on what she believes the Constitution says about the powers of the court, the legislative branch, and the executive branch, the White House. And to say at this point that her views of executive power are not the same as Donald Trump's views of executive power, that would appear to be to state the issue mildly, which means there are many people who are not going to listen to her defenders say she's taking a conservative view of the Constitution and a conservative view of the powers given to the executive branch. And she's treating the executive branch in a way that at times has infuriated the left when she has voted to defend Donald Trump, and has infuriated the right when she has voted in ways that limited the powers of Donald Trump. And she would say, no, I'm trying to be consistent. And there's a wonderful quote in there where they quote the late Justice Scalia, a hero to the legal and political right, where Scalia said, if it's too easy to predict how I'm going to vote, you're probably thinking of my votes in terms of politics and not in terms of my independent views on the constitutional issues in these cases. And I would assume that Amy Coney Barrett would continue to quote Scalia on that point to her attackers on both the left and the right.
Terry, you wanted to compare and contrast two Catholic justices, Barrett and Alito.
Well, the New York Times wants to do that, and they're trying to figure out why Alito has ended up angry with Amy Coney Barrett on a couple of decisions, and that has even kind of bled into some of the decisions. I have a theory about that, and it's another place where I wish the Times had given us more content. I think Alito is looking at his career on the court and kind of the things that he cares about, and he's looking about them through the lens of a very short amount of time left at his age and at the amount of time he wants to spend on the court before he returns to private life, his family, etc. Whereas Amy Coney Barrett is an extremely young member of the court, may be looking toward the future of her own career, and might be some of her caution and frankly, some of her coalition building might be based on her saying, well, in the long haul, what is the concept of the Constitution that I want to defend conceivably through the next nearly two decades or so as a distinct possibility for her in light of her age. So I think that may have something to do with some of the standoffs between Alito and Barrett, but that's just me talking out loud. But here's the thing I wish they had looked at. If you look over the time she's been at the court, there have been some amazing 9-0 decisions by the court. The most celebrated one recently being a very important court decision reaffirming religious freedom in terms of the rights of Catholic organizations to conduct their affairs in a Catholic way or in a way consistent with their Catholic doctrines and beliefs, even if those actions have something to do with, heaven forbid, the sexual revolution. Well, that and some other 9-0 decisions, I think it would be interesting to say, okay, why did the liberals on the court vote with the conservatives on the court in an age in which being pro-religious right is usually viewed as being conservative? And in particular, why did the two liberal female justices vote, quote-unquote, conservative? Well, I think the story suggests that Amy Coney Barrett has gone out of her way to maintain a collegial relationship with Sotomayor and Kagan and has kind of reached out to them and made arguments based on the details of the law. And maybe she's saying to them behind closed doors, look, I have voted your way a couple of times because I was careful about the legal points in this case. Now I would like you to do the same. And listeners should note that Amy Coney Barrett is apparently writing a book right now about her life on the court and how she sees the court working. And let's hope, and we can also, I think, assume that her book will have more to say about her Catholic faith and her legal thoughts than the New York Times did at this point in time.
With about only a minute here, Terry, is this the beginning of something of a romance between the New York Times, and therefore, by extension, the entire rest of the legacy media, and Barrett, or is this just a momentary infatuation?
I think it has to do with an enemy of Trump is an enemy, is a friend of ours. And I think, as the story hints, liberals who think, well, as Amy goes, there goes the court. And right now we like that on some issues and we don't like it on others. I think we can wait for the next big decision where she decides again in favor of traditional views of religious liberty, free speech, and the First Amendment. And we'll see what the Times and the rest of the elite mainstream press has to say about her then.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow on Communications and Culture at St. Constantine College in Houston, Texas. He writes Rational Sheep, a Substack newsletter on faith, family, and mass media. He's author of the National On Religion column for the Andrews McMeel Universal Syndicate. And for two decades, he led the GetReligion.org website. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.
You've been listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly, the Rational Sheep podcast.